Estate versus Benjamin T. Frederick. Mr. Harris, good morning.
Good morning, Judge.
You may approach.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Greg Harris. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Benjamin Frederick. This case involves an appeal of a conviction for driving under revocation under Nebraska Revised Statute 60-4108. I'd like to give a brief summary of the facts as part of my argument because I think it's very important in this case. The police were summoned to the Walmart parking lot in Kearney based on a report of a verbal altercation and that the appellant was driving at the parking lot at a time when his driving privileges had been revoked. The police, while en route, verified this, that he was in fact revoked by the Department of Motor Vehicles under the Administrative License Revocation Act. Upon arriving at the parking lot, the officer observed the appellant driving around in the parking area, but they never observed him driving anywhere other than in the parking lot. He parked his car. The officer came up to him, asked him if he had a Nebraska license. He was unable to produce it, and he was arrested.
Is there any evidence in the record at all that he ever drove anywhere other than in that parking lot?
No, there is not. I think that was the next part of what I was going to say, is that at the time of the hearing, there was no evidence adduced by way of the testimony of the officer that he ever observed him driving on a public street or highway. There were no statements made by the appellant that he had been driving on a public street or highway. There was no third-party witnesses that testified to that effect.
Can an inference be drawn that he could not have gotten there?
I'm sorry,
without,
Judge?
Can an inference be drawn that he could not have gotten there without driving on a public...
I think that is one inference one could draw, but I also know that there was another person with him at the time. They don't know whether he was there, come with someone else and gotten in with her and was driving. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. And so it puts the finder of fact into the area of what I would say is speculation. There's just insufficient evidence to establish that, in fact, he was driving on a public street or highway.
The section under which he was convicted have any reference to public highway?
No, it does not.
He wasn't charged under the section that specifically referenced public highway, was he?
What he was charged under was that if you are under revocation by either a court or by a state administration, which would be the Department of Motor Vehicles, you're not allowed to operate a motor vehicle. But I think what you have to look at first to determine whether or not he was actually in violation of the law was what was it that he had taken from him.
Well, if a farmer's in the middle of his field driving a tractor and he's been revoked under this statute, is he guilty?
No.
Why?
Because you don't have to have an operator's license to do just what the court described.
Would your argument be this? What would your argument be if he was arrested for, say, DUI or reckless driving?
Okay, for reckless driving, that comes under the rules of the road. And there's a statute that specifically provides that the rules of the road only apply to highways.
And same with DUI.
The DUI, there's a refinement to that. It applies anywhere in the state except private property that's not open to public access. But that's a driving under the influence statute and not this revocation.
So you would agree that this place was open to public access?
It was.
And you obviously have numerous public, other members of the public in that parking lot.
Yes. I think if there was a problem with his driving, that's between him and Walmart.
Well, is this kind of a loophole, you think, that the legislature failed to provide for?
I don't think it's covered by our statutes. And that, the thrust of our argument is that you go back to what did they revoke? And what they wrote, it was his operating privileges, and I direct the court's attention to the need for a driver's license is defined under Nebraska Revised Statute 60484, which in part provides that no resident of Nebraska shall operate a motor vehicle upon the alleys or highways of this state until the person has obtained an operator's license for that purpose. That's it. It does not go into private property open to public access. You need an operator's license for either driving a vehicle on a highway or an alley. So when Mr. Frederick got his license revoked, that's what they revoked. Not his right to operate a tractor out on a farm or to drive around in a parking lot at Walmart. They didn't take that from him. So he wasn't under revocation for those purposes. And whether it's a loophole in the law or not, I don't know, but I think that's a proper reading of the law as it stands today.
But what would be the legislature's obvious intent? Would that be to allow people who've had their licenses revoked drive in public parking lots?
I think that that is a question for the legislature to take up, whether they want to extend the revocation to that. But I don't think they want to get to where they're involved in telling the person what they can and can't do on their private property, even though they may have lost their license. Unless it's done in a fashion that endangers others. There's nothing in the record that indicates that.
So would the police officer have jurisdiction to go in and arrest somebody driving on a public parking lot? Or actually not a public parking lot, but a private lot such as Walmart?
I think if the criminal act involves something other than the operation of a motor vehicle,
there's no jurisdiction on parking lots owned by stores or
they have jurisdiction
shopping centers.
Excuse me, Judge, I'm sorry,
right, go ahead.
I didn't interrupt.
No.
I think they have jurisdiction to go in and make an arrest if necessary if someone is operating a motor vehicle in a way that's endangerous to others. I think they have a right to come on private property if somebody's operating in a fashion that's endangerous to others.
Because it's
a different criminal act.
Rules of the road apply to what?
The rules of the road apply, I think, by the definitions that I found, the highways and alleys. But I think if you see a separate criminal act going on, like using your motor vehicle in a fashion that's dangerous to people in the parking lot, he has a right to come on and arrest for that. Not exactly sure what statute it fit under, but that seems right to me.
You're saying it looks like a criminal act whether or not it's within the rules of the road statute.
That's right. I think they have jurisdiction over, in this case, the city of Kearney. And if there's a criminal activity going on, they can go in and make an arrest. They've got good probable cause. But
I can't remember, what was the basis for the officer's arrest here? He saw the person driving and he knew he was driving on a suspended license. How did he, what gave him the conclusion, the information that he needed to stop or arrest this person? What did he know beforehand?
There was a third party call.
Okay,
from someone at the Walmart parking lot. They got into a verbal altercation and the guy knew that the appellant didn't have his driving privileges at the time and reported that in addition to the altercation.
If the police had arrived and simply waited until your client left the premises, would the result be different?
Well, I hope he wouldn't do that, but if he did, I think once he got on a public street, it's a different matter.
Under this statute, or would it be under the other statute? This is driving on a public highway.
I think once he gets on a public highway, the statute that I think controls is what they took from him, and that's the one where you get your operator's license. Because that's all they took from him. And so what that says is that you have to have an operator's license to be on a public street or an alley, highway. But if you're not there, I don't think it applies. The revocation didn't apply, so he wasn't in violation of the law.
Does the record tell us to what extent, if at all, any of this area is publicly platted?
Does not.
Or dedicated?
No, it does not. The discussion about what went on is quite brief. The bill of exceptions doesn't take very long to go through. There's limited conversation about the driving pattern, and all of it is centered on what he was doing at the parking lot. There's no discussion about what streets are on either side of Walmart and so forth. It simply is not there. Any further questions? I don't believe so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Liss, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Nathan Liss, appearing on behalf of the appellee of the State of Nebraska. There are two questions here, or at least two potential questions. First question is the driver's license required to drive on private property? If the answer to that question is yes, then Mr. Frederick is obviously guilty and no further discussion is necessary. If the answer is no, the driver's license is not required to drive on private property. Second, and dispositive question here, is whether the evidence is nonetheless sufficient to conclude that he drove on a public roadway prior to getting to Walmart in this case. As far as the first question, whether a driver's license is required to drive on private property, the answer appears to be no, based on my review of the law. The controlling statutes here are located in Article 4, Chapter 60, the Motor Vehicle Operators License Act. Section 60-484 of that act, which governs when a license is required, specifically provides that except as otherwise provided in the act, no resident of the state shall operate a motor vehicle on the alleys or highways of the state unless they have a license to do so. No mention of it being required for private property. And then Section 60-480 of the act, which governs the types of licenses that may be issued and what they authorize, provides that a general Class O license, which is the license required for any motor vehicle other than a commercial vehicle or a motorcycle, general Class O license authorizes a person to whom it's issued to operate a motor vehicle on the highways of the state. Again, no indication that it's required for private property or that it authorizes to drive on private property. So there's no language in either of these statutes or anywhere in the Act, based on my review of it, which requests or indicates that a license is required to drive on private property. Our case law also seems to support this conclusion based on my review of this Court's decision in State v. Hanger. Citation for Hanger, which was not cited in either of the parties' briefs, is 241-812, cases from 1992. That's H-A-N-G-E-R. The Court's not aware of the opinion. Hanger did not squarely address this question, but my reading of it certainly suggests that a driver's license is not required on private property, because in Hanger, as in this case, it was undisputed that the defendant had driven on a private parking lot, but in upholding the defendant's conviction for driving under suspension, this Court relied entirely on the fact the circumstantial evidence established that he would have driven on a public roadway to get to the private parking lot.
What did the district court find? What statute did the district court rely on?
The district court relied on the interplay between 60-4, 186 and the statute in question at play here, 60-4, 108, and noted that the other statute, 60-4, 186, which applies to a person losing their license due to an accumulation of points, specifically says that a person who's been revoked for that purpose shall not operate a motor vehicle on a public roadway. Whereas the statute in question, 60-4, 108, doesn't contain the language about public roadway.
So am I hearing this correctly, that you're conceding that the court, well, that a motorist or somebody that under suspension can drive on a Walmart parking lot?
Well, I'm going to stop short of conceding it, Your Honor.
But
based on my reading of the law, the case law, and the Motor Vehicle Operators License Act, I see nothing that requires a license.
Appreciate your candor.
But again, yeah, I'm going to stop short of conceding it just because, I mean, the district court went the other way, and just with the nature of a concession, I guess my view on it is that the law or fact in question is clear. Concessions warranted here since the district court went the other direction. I guess reasonable minds could differ, and there's obviously some room for interpretation here, so I think this court needs to speak on it, not me. If this is the conclusion the court reaches in this case, then the second and dispositive question is whether the evidence is nonetheless sufficient to conclude Mr. Frederick drove on a public roadway prior to arriving at Walmart. We submit that the answer is yes, in light of the evidence adduced at trial and the applicable standard of review. The evidence at trial established that the officer responded to a disturbance or a reported disturbance at Walmart involving Mr. Frederick. The reported disturbance pertained to Mr. Frederick driving on a revoked license or not having a license. On arrival, the officer saw Mr. Frederick driving up and down a few rows of the parking lot and then parked the vehicle he was driving. And then the officer approached Mr. Frederick and confirmed that his license was revoked. In light of this evidence, we would submit that there is a reasonable basis to conclude that Mr. Frederick had driven on a public roadway prior to arriving at Walmart. And I would note that the facts of this case are almost right in line with the Hanger case that I just mentioned. The facts of Hanger briefly stated were that an officer was dispatched to the gas station in response to a reported disturbance. Upon arrival, he made contact with the defendant, who was sitting in a car alone with the keys in the ignition.
Well, that distinguishes the case right there, doesn't it? Hanger from this case, because there was a passenger in this case?
Well, the defendant in Hanger, who had a suspended license, admitted he had driven in the gas station parking lot, but claimed that his girlfriend had driven to the gas station. The girlfriend was never located, however, nor was any evidence ever induced.
Why didn't the state offer the testimony of the passenger in this vehicle?
Can't answer that question, Your Honor. I don't know. I didn't try the case. Would have been helpful. They didn't, and we don't have an explanation of that. But I don't think that necessarily weighs against this or doesn't necessarily distinguish this case from Hanger. I mean, as far as the fact that there was a female passenger in the vehicle in this case, while it's a possibility that she could have driven, I guess, I would point out that the state's not required from a sufficiency standpoint to disprove every hypothesis without guilt. I would also point out that there was no evidence from the defendant's standpoint. There was no evidence adduced to show that female passenger was of age to drive, that she was physically capable of driving. They adduced no evidence to establish anything about the female from their end, and so I'm not sure that there's any basis to conclude that female could have been driving based on the record.
Counsel, your argument with the standard of review is essentially that on appeal we must view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state and give the state the benefit of any reasonable inference. Is that the heart of your argument?
It is, Your Honor.
At the trial court level, if this had been tried to a jury, would the jury have properly been instructed that in assessing the evidence, one may consider inferences, but if the inferences are equally weighed, the state may not sustain its burden of proof solely upon the inference favoring the state?
I'm not sure if the jury would have been instructed on that principle.
Isn't that a rule of law that would typically apply at the trial court level, that if the inferences are evenly balanced and that's the only evidence on an issue, that the party who has the burden of proof cannot sustain that burden solely by relying on the inference?
I'm not disputing that, Your Honor. That's honestly, it's news to me if that's the case. I've never encountered that or seen an instruction to that effect. But even assuming that that is the law, I guess my response is still that under the standard of review on appeal here, the evidence is viewed in a light most favorable to the state. So even if we have two equally possible inferences, under our standard of review for reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence claim, the controlling inference would be the one viewed in a light most favorable to the state. And I think our case law, what it explains that that's
right,
how it is.
Are the inferences equal here?
No, I don't think that they are, given that we know nothing about this female passenger. There's no other evidence to establish that anyone else would have been driving the vehicle. And so I guess, to me, the most reasonable inference, the most likely inference here is that Mr. Frederick, who was driving the vehicle when the officer arrived and who was the subject of the report that was based on him driving without a license, was the individual who had driven the vehicle to Walmart.
Was there any evidence who the vehicle was registered to?
No evidence adduced on that particular fact. I believe that the vehicle did not have a plate on it, but no evidence as to who owned it. But based on the evidence and standard of review, Your Honor, that really is the crux of our argument. I think it hinges on the standard of review. And we would submit that, in light of the standard of review, the evidence is sufficient.
So the inference that would go against, or that would weigh against, would be that the car was there the
day, or it had never left the parking lot, or it was someone else's car. Those are the sorts of inferences that we would have to look at.
Right, and when we start to look at some of those sorts of inferences, to me they certainly aren't the most reasonable inferences. The fact that they might have been there for days and then they showed up and were just happened to be driving away. I think when we look at the potential conflicting inferences or the inferences that would weigh to Mr. Frederick's benefit, they are...
The fact that there's a second person in the car changes this a little bit, doesn't it? Because they could have an inference that person drove there.
It definitely comes into play here. I don't know that that makes it the most likely inference, given that, again, from the defendant's standpoint, there's no evidence that that individual could or was driving the vehicle, nor has there ever been any assertion that that vehicle was driving the vehicle at any point in time. No evidence against a trial, no assertion on appeal. That's the way to submit the most reasonable inference instead with Mr. Frederick. There are no further questions.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? We will go on then to the second case of the day, which is Timberlake versus Douglas County, Nebraska.